Welcome to the Your Startup Advisors podcast. We know that it is a startup world. We also know that many people are ready to start a business. This is the podcast that cuts right to the chase. Funding, hiring, selling, expanding. Learn how to get it going all in the right direction. Your host is John Klimshin. Klimshin is an author, speaker, and coach who has built organizations from scratch. His work with startups, leaders, and disruptive technology stretches across the globe. Now, here's John.
It is, without question, a startup world. My name is John Klimshin, and it is my pleasure and privilege to be your host for the Your Startup Advisors podcast. When we started this podcast, we had no idea where it was going to go. And today, we have a lot of ideas of where it can go. One of the things that we were not aware of is the absolute international ability to connect, the international appeal to being able to attract guests who know what the startup experience and the startup world is all about. And how do they know that? Because they live in it. Because they have started something from scratch and made it work. Also, they have started something from scratch and maybe it did not work out. You've listened to, I hope, many of our guests talk about the reality of what it means to be a participant, a contributor, and a soldier, if you will, in the startup world. We today are reaching across the globe to speak to people from all different arenas with all different backgrounds. And today we are speaking to one of our listeners, one of our, we hope, new friends, and one of our members of the startup community from Poland. We are going to speak today with Kuba Lipinski. And Kuba has created, along with others, a company that does some very exciting things in what sounds like a very exciting arena in the startup world in Poland, just outside of Warsaw. Polidea is his creation, and it is a software and design house that works for mobile and what we now all call IoT. I'm sure we all remember just a few moments ago where we would go through the trouble of describing it as the Internet of Things. But since we live in an acronym world and we want to rush through a lot of things, we've changed it to IoT. I've been introduced to Kuba, and we've had the opportunity to speak not once but twice prior to this interview. And I'm excited because I want to find out what the common threads are that we have across the globe in the startup community. We'll edit that out. I want to find out the view today from this portion of Europe as to what the future looks like in technology, in startups, in human capital, in creativity, and in overall opportunity. We get into the startup world because we think we have a great idea. We get up into the startup world because we think we're going to make money. If we can make those two things work together, then it's a beautiful thing. So I don't want to go on too long without inviting him in, but I also do want to invite everyone who is listening to follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @TheStartupCoach. Startup is not spelled with an A. I don't know why it worked out that way, but that's what we're running with. Would love for you to connect with me personally on LinkedIn. My name is John Klimshin. There are no vowels in the name. You can find it on the show descriptor. And we want to hear from you. Who do you know? Who have you met? Who do you admire that is in the startup world, regardless of what country, that you think would be a good guest for us to connect with, to have some laughs with, and to learn from? So I've been talking long enough. I'm very excited today to invite and to welcome Kuba Lipinski to our podcast.
Hello, John. Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for inviting me. I am excited.
Excellent. So I'm going to try one more time to pronounce the welcome to our Polish listeners. It is Dzień dobry, Polska.
Perfect. Ready.
Wow. I like that. Well, I listened to a recording of someone say it, and I have a very musical ear, so I've always been relatively good with pronunciation of what to an American is foreign languages. There's an old joke that says, what do you call someone that speaks three languages? And the answer is trilingual. What do you call someone who speaks two languages? And the answer is bilingual. And then the punchline is, what do you call someone who speaks one language? And the answer is American.
There is something about that. But you have this, privilege that many people in the world speak English.
It is. And it is the language of business. And we are learning that every day with the expansion of listeners across the globe. So, Kuba, let's talk a little bit about Polidea, where the idea came from. I love the fact that you merge Poland and idea. That's cool. Where did the idea come from?
Oh, yeah. So regarding the name, actually, the name Polidea has many different explanations. So Polish idea is one of them, as you figure it out. There is also poly idea, like from Greek, you know, poly, like multiple, many ideas.
Right.
So it's another explanation. We are also very connected to University of Technology in Warsaw, which we call Polytechnic. So it's like another thing, and also another thing, and also Politeia was a kind of ideal state devised by Plato some time ago. So all those meanings, you know, are inside the name of my company, Politeia.
That is fascinating, and I want to explore your relationship with the university as we continue the conversation. So it's great to come up with a name that has a lot of different meanings. I'm a very big fan of language, as we were discussing before we started the recording. I want to make sure I pronounce it properly, Politeia. When you started Politeia, what was your vision?
Okay, so we need to get back to when I started it. It was in 2009, and it was just the beginning of this modern mobile revolution that we are still living in right now. Mm-hmm. And I mean by that this was the time when iPhone and Android phones were introduced. The modern phones were actually started really being popular, and then dominated, you know, the world of devices that we use nowadays all the time.
Right. So what did you hope you would do with this company?
So the idea was that it was not that obvious by that time, but the idea was that actually those new devices, iPhones and Android devices, will become the dominant devices and platforms that we will be using for communicating with everything. And because it was very new by that time, we just thought that it would be great if there is a company that can help others to navigate through this new ecosystem and actually, you know, move their solutions and their services to this new mobile space. And this is why we started Politeia, to actually enable others to start also to actually jump into this revolution.
So you say that we started it. Who else was involved, and what was their role?
So there are a few founders of the company. It changed a little bit over time, but I would say that like the two people at the very beginning were most important: myself and my CTO Jarek. And we were really like building the company together, you know, every day, full time. Other founders were more involved in like business and business development areas of the companies of the company.
So the original team was 3-4 people? And, looking back, it appears to me that the idea to help people navigate through this just brand new landscape that you and I now live in every day, the mobile app and Internet of Things world, is as familiar to us as literally the street that we live on today. But in 2009, This was blue ocean stuff. This was wide open, no definition, no roadmap. It seems to me that was a pretty visionary idea.
Yeah, it was some kind of instinct, you know, that we really, we believed that this is going to happen, and it happened. By that time, you know, it wasn't that obvious. And it was great that actually the bet we put on this kind of future actually happened.
I like the fact that you use the word bet, because it had to appear to you and your co-founders to be a wild risk.
Well, it wasn't a big risk, really. You know, starting a company, like, you can, like, what worries me? What worst may happen to you? You can just fail. We were lucky and we didn't. The company is pretty successful. But, you know, it's only business. Failure is not probably the worst thing that may happen to you.
Okay. Well, that attitude fascinates me, because I've spoken with a lot of people that literally act as though it is a situation of life or death. The way that you talk about it, it's like, you know, oh, we didn't get the table we wanted at the restaurant. Now, is that a Polish mindset? Is that a Cuba mindset? Is it some combination of the two?
I don't know. You know, I also might be biased, because actually, you know, I am a successful entrepreneur, and, you know, it's probably, it all looks differently if you actually probably have several failures on the way. So it's hard to me really to like say definitely. But I believe there is something about, you know, Polish people, that we are fighters, you know, and we love to win, and if we lose, we usually just, you know, try again.
So there's a kind of an indomitable spirit.
Oh yeah.
I love the tone of your voice when you respond that way. That's great. So let's hear about some of the tougher things that happened early on with an indomitable spirit. I'm sure they may not seem as dramatic as maybe other folks, but as you said, you've been a successful entrepreneur, so the view's a little bit different. Have you ever had something fail?
Oh, of course I did. Oh, I have. Okay. Yeah. Lots of things. So if you ask me, you know, if being an entrepreneur is a stressful job, or it is, and you can probably ask my wife about that, because she was mostly, you know, affected by all the stressful situations that were bothering me. You know, as a CEO of the company, you cannot really share all your, you know, all the things you are afraid of with others, because, you know, you don't want others to be scared or to think that, you know, the company is doomed. But it happened to us, you know, a few times that I was really like thinking, okay, this is the end. You know, we don't have projects, we have too many people, we have salaries to pay. It was very, very stressful. Fortunately, we somehow figure out how to, you know, overcome all of those challenges. But the most stressful situations for me over the time of running the company was actually related to people, and mostly people leaving the company. You know, every time, especially at the beginning of the company, when, you know, you have this particular approach to, or kind of emotional relationship with people you work with, especially at the very beginning of the company. And if they, you know, come over and say, hey, I'm actually leaving, I'm going somewhere else, I'm, you know, I want to learn something new. It was really, really tough for me. Because I was thinking that this is somehow, you know, that it's somehow it's the opinion of the company. You know, they say that they start believe into the company. I had to learn that actually, you know, people leaving the company is something normal. It's gonna happen. It will be happening all the time, and people just want new challenges. But at first, it was pretty emotional for me. I had lots of sleepless nights.
Wow. So how did you get through that? What do you think, what did you learn from that, I guess, is the best question.
So I am still very emotional in terms of, you know, people who work with me, and it's still very emotional when someone quits. But I also learned that, you know, that, you know, that especially when the company is bigger, if a few people leaves, it's not, you know, such a big problem as I envisioned, really. You hire new people, you somehow, you know, refresh the culture, you start hiring experienced people from outside of the company. So you somehow, you are able to actually learn something new from people quit, when they quit, and actually when new people, and when you hire new people. There's some kind of, you know, reinforcement of the culture, I believe, with every new company.
So when you were early on in the development of this company and people would come to you and let you know that they were going to leave, it almost sounds, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost sounds as though you kind of took it personally.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and that was a mistake.
I'm only laughing because I remember doing the same thing in one of my first roles as a manager. When someone quit, I thought, well, what did I do wrong? Why would you possibly leave? I thought we were doing something exciting here. And notice that all of those were about me. None of them were about what's the best future for this person? Where can they learn more? How can they advance their career?
Yeah. That's, you know, it's a common mistake, probably, you know, fresh young CEOs do.
Absolutely. So you learn to adjust to that. And it sounds as though you had, you kind of opened up your mind to a larger vision of the fact that people are going to come and go over the course of the life of the company.
Yes. I also think that, you know, it was interesting to see the company growing in some kind of stages. You know, there were some kind of periods in the lifetime of the company, and I can see now from a perspective how actually we were changing, how we were adapting to the market. Do you want to hear about that?
Absolutely.
So the first like crazy few years were all about, like, you know, trying to learn about iPhone, Android, you know, market opportunities. You know, it was all very, very early. There were not so many devices on the market. So companies were not that happy to actually, you know, invest into mobile applications. Can you imagine that, by the way? And it was all about like learning, and, you know, there were no software engineers who really understood mobile. Yeah. Cause it was new for everybody. So we were just constantly learning from every project, from, you know, every new opportunity, every new device, every new ideas on the market. We were learning what is possible. So the second stage was actually the time when we already knew some stuff and we started feeling more confident about what we can do, what we can achieve. You know, we had some, you know, projects and applications in our portfolio, so we could really reach out to companies, to bigger clients, and actually approach them. So we started to focus on the US market. So by the way, from the very beginning, we were really focusing on the market outside of Poland, like Western Europe and the US were the markets we wanted to approach. And the second stage was all about learning to work with a big international clients from Western Europe and from the US. The third stage of the company was when we understood that, actually it's an interesting thing. We had the tagline of our company for a long time was engineering meets magic.
Engineering meets magic?
Yeah, meets magic. Meets,
wow, I like it.
Yeah, and we knew that engineering is not everything. You know that some applications, some programs, some experiences are, you know, kind of magical. Think about it. There's something magical about that. Yeah.
Right.
And we understand really what this magic is. And in this third stage of the company, we actually understood, we learned that the missing component of our company, this magic, was actually design. And this is when we realized that we need to build a design component into the company so that we can approach our clients not only with engineering services, but also with design services. And it was very interesting because the best designers are people not engineers, but actually people who graduate from, you know, kind of art schools. So we started to hire them, and we had like a lot of challenges because our culture, we realized, was so like engineering driven, and that it was really hard for all those, you know, not engineers, you know, like art people, designers, to actually adopt into our culture. And we had to like change a lot in our culture, in our processes, in communication inside a company, in order to really be able to tell now that we do have design and engineering component.
See, this is fascinating. And forgive me for interrupting, but this is exactly why I wanted to have you on, because I wanted to find out what I refer to as the flashpoint. And the flashpoint means what is the unique thing? And I love the fact that you use the word magic. That to me is very exciting. But what is the flashpoint? And the flashpoint means that there is a specific intersection between two things where they have not or do not exist elsewhere. We can talk about a variety of companies that seem like such simple ideas. However, they put the idea into practice. They found that intersection, and that created something unique enough so that the company would become ubiquitous. I mean, one of the great things about the businesses in the 70s and 80s was that if the name of your business became a verb, at least in the United States, in our English, our version of English, if the name of your company became a verb, then you knew you had market penetration. Like here in the US, and I don't know if it's in Europe, and you'll tell me whether or not, but to FedEx something means that you're going to ship it overnight. You may not necessarily use Federal Express to do that, but the fact that to FedEx something became a verb, that meant real penetration and brand awareness.
Yeah, it is a very American thing, I believe. It's I think it's related to like the size of the market you have there.
Okay, all right. So the intersection. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I know what you mean. But please go on. Go on.
Well, and the intersection that you guys found, and it sounds like you almost found it by accident, and by accident, I mean, you knew you wanted to get somewhere, you just weren't sure how to get there. The intersection you found was the importance of having design people be able to communicate, work with, and create with engineers.
Yes, that is fully correct. And it literally took us, I believe, 2 years, and probably some people will still say that this process is not finished. But these are really two different groups of people. And, you know, I was even, but this is all serious, but, you know, it turned out that our company, our office, was actually a place where engineers and designers were meeting each other for the first time. They might have, you know, studied in the same city, but these were like different schools. You know, they were going to different concerts. They were going to different pubs. They were eating in different places. They literally like could not have met each other, you know, like at all during 5 years of their school. And now, like totally different people, they meet in some company and they are asked to work together. Oh, it was a big challenge, really.
What did you find was the biggest challenge? I'm curious as to what you saw as what took you 2 years to either get, understand, or I guess the important word is accept.
I think, I think it's all about the, it's a little bit about the language. So they just speak different language. You know, if you were an engineer, and I'm, and my background is engineering. So, you know, whenever I see some challenge, for example, client just, you know, propose, like describes his problem he wants or she wants to solve, I start immediately to think about some kind of engineering solution. You know, I see databases, I see code, I see processes, I see some kind of user interface. It just happens to me automatically. And the design people, they usually see users. They ask totally different questions. They are not so quick to, you know, start you know, solving the particular issue or challenge. They are more tempted to actually understand more and maybe they rethink actually the problem and solve something different that, you know, engineer would solve very, very quickly because he, she thinks this is really the problem.
Well, it makes a lot of sense because I consider myself someone who's creative. I've been a musician since I was 9 years old. I've written multiple books. I have facilitated conversations among people that are very diverse in background. And it sounds like your engineers and your designers are very diverse. And you said some key things there that I want us to quickly revisit. Number one, you said these people are on the same campus going to college, but they go to different concerts, different pubs, different restaurants. So they're effectively living in a different world. It could be across the street. It could be right next door, but they're living in a different world. And the way that you really drove that home is that you said they speak different languages. So how did you as an engineer learn to speak the language of design?
I hired a great woman who is now our head of design, and she taught me everything. Really, I mean, and it was a hard way, really, because she was just coming to my office and saying, "No, wrong. You do everything wrong."
Well, I like her already.
I had this. I don't know. Maybe I had the courage to actually, you know, listen to her and introduce, you know, the changes she was proposing, and. And probably if you ask her, this task is not yet done. We are still, you know, far away from being a truly, you know, design company. But we changed a lot. We changed a lot in our culture, you know, in terms of to be prepared really to tackle, you know, design and engineering challenges.
All right. So I'm going to ask you something personal. You may choose not to answer. And if not, we can edit it out. What was the hardest thing for you to learn?
I can answer that. I think like the hardest thing that we had to learn was that our company, you know, especially in this engineering period, was a very like masculine company. I don't know if I use the right word. You know, the majority of people were, you know, majority of people were men in the company.
Okay.
And it did affect our company in a way that we were just capable of doing like less things because we just, you know, we just like had only one part of the brain, like metaphorically.
So you were limited.
Yes, we were just limited. Yeah. And like introducing, you know, more designers and more women into the company change the culture, and I believe we are much better right now, even still not ideal.
Well, it makes me go back to what you originally said about the idea behind the name. Sounds like you were uncovering things, you were learning things as a result of the name that maybe were not conscious. You know, you said the prefix, the word poly, has so many different levels of meaning. Poly, right?
That's a great thought, that this poly ideas, like many ideas, many like diverse ideas, you know, this thought that the more people you put into room and you create some kind of collaborative, you know, ecosystem for them to discuss and to figure out what's best. It's actually a great approach to you know, solving challenges.
Interesting. So let's see, what did I want to know? Oh, so your current role is a little different from what it was while you were building the company. What is it that you, what's your title and how do you spend your time now?
John, can we actually, because this was the third stage of the company and I didn't, you know, didn't tell you about the fourth one.
Well, I'm sorry I interrupted. I forgive me. I'm rude. Let's hear about the fourth stage of the company.
Later. But the fourth stage of the company, the current one, is that we also discovered that, you know, that we all know now that the mobile device is actually like a central, you know, central interface to the outside world. But it's not only interface to, you know, to the application and services, you know, somewhere in the cloud, but it's also device that you use to control more and more things around you. And this is how we get to the IoT, you know, Internet of Things. We now realize that we just use our mobile phone as a remote controller of, you know, everything that is around us, whether it's a smartwatch or it's you know, some kind of sound system or our projector or whatever at our homes and in our cars. So we decided that we want to, you know, learn more about that. And we now, I think the majority of our projects right now are somehow related to some kind of external device, whether it's a sound system, whether it's some medical health related device, or it's, you know, some kind of smart thing. We do tackle such projects and we have lots of experience with that.
Interesting. So you've been through four stages and you're in that stage today. Will there be a fifth?
Absolutely. I'm sure about that. You know, I believe it may be something related to VR, virtual reality, or augmented reality. This is what we are now exploring and, you know, and experimenting with.
Well, I'm excited to hear that. What right now, at this point in time, at this stage, this phase of history, what do you see happening 5 years on?
Oh, that's a really tough question.
Well, I didn't bring you on here so you would answer softball questions. I want to get inside your head a little bit.
So from our perspective, the question is like, what will be really the interface that we will be using to, you know, to communicate with the internet and with the virtual world. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, definitely our mobile phone is the thing we use. I am a big believer of augmented reality. I think that this will be like the next stage of how we will interact with both, like, you know, with this kind of mixture of the real world and the internet / virtual world, because actually this is a perfect interface to you know, to augment both of these worlds.
Well, your design people must be very excited about what they're going to be able to create here very soon.
Oh, yeah. We are all looking forward to it.
So one of the things that I see in my notes, and I've been taking notes as you've been talking, is that there is a common theme, a common thread from the outset of the creation of Paul Idea to what you're doing now and what you see happening. And you use the word learning again and again and again. As an engineer, is that kind of bred into you in school, or is that something that you saw that was necessary to be successful as an entrepreneur?
I think I learned it, you know.
You learned how to learn. I like it.
Yes, exactly. I learned it on the way, you know, in order really to Yeah, this is like this kind of state of being constantly open to learn new things as actually something that constitutes the entrepreneur in my opinion.
So now that you are this many years in, as I mentioned before, I didn't ask you to go to the fourth stage of the company, but your role is different now than it was when you started the company.
Yeah, that's correct. September last year, I stepped down from being CEO. My friend and colleague Greg was appointed to be a CEO, and I moved to the chairman position. So I am no longer responsible for like day-to-day executive tasks. My role is now much more related to like a strategy, PR, and some of the business development.
So what of those responsibilities, which one do you find that you enjoy the most?
All of them, really. I still love to, talk to some of our clients and learn from them what's new, what they need. I do love to communicate about what we do to others. You know, this is a great example. Actually, this podcast is a great example of this kind of task. And also, this strategy thing, this is actually what we were discussing, like whether it's VR or is it AR, what's next, really, what we should be prepared for. I'm still involved in figuring it all out.
So right now, what do you think the timeline is for things to move beyond mobile apps?
I think that we still need some few years really for some radical change in how we interact with technology. Everything that we are seeing right now, I think it's even in the earlier stage that the mobile phones were when I was starting the company. So it is early. I mean, it is a ripe time already to like start experimenting. We do that, but it will take some time.
So while you started as a project oriented organization, you now have the ability to experiment. So that must be pretty exciting for you.
Oh yes, yes, and there are lots of different areas that will be affected, that will be revolutionized by technology. Mobile phones and interacting with technology is one of them, but we are seeing all the things related to data, the machine learning, data analysis, artificial intelligence. We see autonomous cars come in, and they will also like change a lot, around us. So, it's pretty fascinating to follow all of that and like figuring out, what can we also do, how we can take part in all those changes.
So right now in the stage or the phase of the company that you're in now, are you still, I want to phrase this question correctly. How do you win business? Are you coming up with ideas and then going out to find people to sell those ideas to? Or do you go to potential clients and say, what is it that you want to do? We can create it for you. Or is it some combination of the two?
So it usually starts with a client having some kind of, challenge that is related, to some of their services or a product that they want to give to their users. And they need, someone who will help them with designing that, with, building the some kind of engineering, backend solutions and mobile solutions. And if there's some kind of, or they want to, introduce some new hardware, some kind of, you know, smart, next smart thing, and they want a partner to help them, you know, putting it all into a nice, usable service. This is okay. where we're approached, when we are approached, and this is when we can help.
I get it. Excellent. So we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left, and I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us. I hope it's been a fun experience for you. It's been fascinating for me. It's very informative and inspiring, really, to see that someone that is that focused on learning. And it's amazing to me that the more we kind of position our mind to learn on a regular basis, the more opportunity shows up in our life for us to learn. Do you find that for yourself as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, I fully agree.
So what do you believe with all of your heart and soul is absolutely critical to building a sustainable startup?
What is that one? I don't know. I can tell only what works for me. Okay. I was thinking about it recently. And in my case, what really worked was this kind of, you know, being a person that can really list all the things that needs to be done and just, you know, tackle them one by one. It's kind of, you know, getting things done attitude. That's one of the things. The other one is actually to be able at the same time to detach from that and like look at everything from some kind of perspective, you know, have some kind of, you know, off time when you can just, you know, really detach and rethink everything. And this really helps you, you know, build your next to-do list. Okay. So, but it's really important that you really spend some time on just thinking, rethinking, and, you know, doing some experiments. And the third element of that is actually to reach out to people and ask them for advice. And I do it like many times. So that if I have some kind of challenge, I just reach to people who are smarter than me. And, you know, usually they really answer and they meet and they help you. That's really interesting. Most people think that they just don't have time. But I have a great track record of very smart people that, you know, I reached to like totally like a cold email and they just answered, they met me and, you know, they helped me.
Wow. I certainly hope that everyone who started listening to this stayed with us, because right near the end, we got some incredible wisdom. And please don't take it as though what we discussed earlier was not. This has been fantastic. But this really, this punches me right in the chest. Now, that may be an American way of expressing it. This really gets my attention. This really resonates with me, Kuba, because we live in a world where I don't believe there is as much of a premium put on the importance and the value and the health of stopping and thinking. Now, I'm sure listeners are thinking, well, he's the chairman of the board. He's built a successful company. He can afford to sit around and look out the window and think. I have been advising every leader that I've worked with over many years to find time 2 or 3 times a week to pull away from their desk and turn and look out the window, to go on a walk without their mobile phone. I know that horrifies you because you want them using the mobile apps that you've developed. And that was a joke, and that's okay. Yeah. I guess it wasn't that funny. But to just this... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
All right. So it's incredibly important, and it is very healthy, and it's very useful to find time to think. Second, experiment. You're not going to come up with the brilliant idea, the perfect invention every time. You have to doodle. Have a piece of paper. Have a whiteboard. Have something where you can experiment. You can try stuff. You can march it out to other people and test it. And then the other thing, which requires, I think, humility. And I love the word humility because it begins with the same prefix as human, that humility is very human. And that when we open ourselves to say, I don't have all the answers, I may not come up with everything that's brilliant, I want to go out and I want to bounce this off of someone who, as you said, is smarter than me, has a different insight than me, has different perspective that's going to help me to go back to our key word for this entire podcast, which is to learn. All of this requires investment, patience, and focus. And this is gold right here. And this is clearly why we were connected and why we invited you on the podcast.
Thank you very much, John. Really, it was a pleasure. And I believe you have a great talent of, conversing with people and actually, forcing them to think and answer your great questions.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm definitely not going to edit that out. We have spent 40 or more minutes with Kuba Lipinski from Warsaw, Poland. He is the chairman of the board, the founder, the former CEO of Polidea. I encourage everyone to look at their website and to look at some of the work that they do. I encourage everyone to keep their eyes and their ears open, their mind prepared to learn new things. And when I started this podcast, I said we weren't really sure where this was going to go. If you've learned anything, if you've gotten anything out of this, if you've been inspired in any way, shape, or form, then we owe a great thank you to Kuba for taking the time to do this. I hope that this is the beginning of many conversations between us.
Okay. Yes, I'm looking forward.
Excellent. You've been listening to the Your Startup Advisors podcast. Before you click off, before you end, just want to remind you, my name's John Klimshin. I invite you to, it occurred to me as we were going through this, I invite you to go to YouTube and subscribe to my Simple Truth video series. They're a minute and a half, 2 minutes each. They are ideas, thoughts, practical application approaches to running your day, to inspiring other people, and hopefully inspiring you. This is the Your Startup Advisors podcast. My name is John Klimshin. Let's all go out and do something great today.
You've been listening to the Your Startup Advisors podcast. For more in-depth opportunities to learn from our advisors, be sure to visit our website at www.yourstartupadvisors.com. Our business is building. Thank you for listening.